Good evening, everybody. This is Laika, and this is the None of the Above show on sfdradio.com. This is a show about everything non-mainstream, because I'm trans and queer and kinky and pagan and all sorts of things like that, so it's a show about all that kind of stuff. And tonight, I have my friend Amy Mercury back on the show. Say hi, Amy.
Hey, everybody. How's it going?
And she was on the show, I don't know, was it like 5-6 weeks ago, maybe?
Yeah, it's like probably around August or so.
Yeah.
Because it was just after FedCon.
After FetishCon, mm-hmm. Right. And I'm really excited to have her back. So we have some different stuff I thought I would chat about tonight. But first, how have you been since last time we had you?
Oh, well, great, busy, but great. I actually just moved from New Jersey down to Florida. We had a little bit of our landlord decided to raise our rent, and we decided, you know what, let's move to Florida where our friends are at, where the community's good, too, and we found a really good place. So I just got moved about 2-3 weeks ago, so I'm still settling in, still finding surprises in boxes, but overall it's been a really good choice.
That can always be fun, at least when the surprises are things that didn't formerly, you know, be alive or something. And then when you find them as a surprise, they're no longer alive. And
you're like, oh.
That could be problematic.
Although I did find we had these bugs up in Jersey, like they're called like box elder bugs or stink bugs or something. Whatever.
Oh, stink bugs. Yep.
And you know, that was kind of a problem up there. It was an old house. Mm-hmm. And I opened a box the other day and one was like, hey, and I'm like, oh, God.
Nice. Well, I lived up in Delaware. We had stink bugs too, but they never really smelled to me. Mm-hmm. And I think I read somewhere there's an article about there's a variety of organic smells that some people perceive differently. Mm-hmm. And the odor emitted by stink bugs is one of those things that it never smelled very smelly to me. It was just this faint insect odor, but that was
it. Yeah, that's kind of how I perceived it. It just smelled like old house. You know?
Yeah, but some people are like, oh my God, those are horrible. I can't stand the smell of those. And I'm like, what would stand the smell of what?
Yeah, that's funny.
So, yeah.
Interesting.
So, just for anybody who didn't catch you last time, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I have been shooting fetish work. I've been doing, I was started out as a cam model. I've been in the industry about 3 years now. I do a variety of things from phone sex to fetish films. I shoot for, I've done vanilla work. I've shot for other studios. I have my own studios. And when I'm not doing that, I actually write and illustrate erotic fiction.
Very cool. And we'll have to come back to that later and talk a little bit about the kind of stuff you make. Because one thing that I want to have more of on the show, and haven't had that much of so far, is content that is not necessarily just performing in front of a camera. So it is one day before Halloween, as it's modern traditionally celebrated. So for everybody who celebrates Halloween, happy Halloween.
Yay.
For everybody who is celebrating Samhain around this time, happy Samhain.
And
Celtic
those,
New Year.
And for all those who don't celebrate it, shame on you.
And for all those people who don't realize that Halloween and Samhain are kind of the same origin, or at least very much interrelated, mm-hmm. we'll actually get to that in just a minute.
Yeah.
Because I think that's a really interesting topic. Mm-hmm. Since I'm studying a couple different pagan paths, and one of the things that has come up and I've talked about with people that I study with is kind of where some things came from. Around the fire festival of Samhain and some of the traditions of Halloween deriving from different aspects of that and deriving from some different cultural imagery left over from the so-called burning times and different things like that. Let's see. So what is your opinion on Halloween as a holiday? What purpose do you see it fulfilling in maybe not just American culture, but English-speaking culture in most places? Like, what role does it fulfill for people? Because I'm curious about what you think on this, because I have my own thoughts.
Oh, sure, sure. Well, for one thing, I've always loved Halloween. It's probably been, like, you know, my favorite, you know, probably my favorite holiday since I was a kid. You know, it's like, it's a holiday where you could just, you know, and I suppose my opinion of what I think of Halloween has changed and transformed over the years. As a kid, it was like all about trick-or-treating and it was all about dressing up. And as an adult, you know, I still feel like those things are important. I think it's mm-hmm. a part of our modern culture. And I think that we have a tendency to change the definition of what a holiday is and what it means to us as time goes by, as public opinion changes. But as an adult, for me, as I also identify as pagan, it is changed into something else. Now, I think it's often seen as like the pagan New Year, to my understanding, in which I always thought that was funny as a kid, you know, that like January was the New Year. I'm like, why? I'm in the middle of school now. You know?
Right, right.
So to me, it almost felt like, you know, that almost makes sense as an adult, like that fall would be the New Year. It seemed like kind of a fresh start. So there is that significance for me as well. I think as an adult, Halloween, I have the things that I do, the dressing up, the candy, the little traditions like that. But it also is a time of reflection for me as well. I think it can be a celebration of the dead. It can be a celebration of memories, of times long remembered, and all those other sentimentalities that yeah. I have as an adult. And so for me, I think it's this amalgam of things. It's amalgam of what I enjoyed as a child and what I practice as an adult.
Gotcha. Yeah, that definitely makes sense. See, I've heard a hypothesis that the role it kind of fulfills in culture is that, like several of the different festivals that we have where we kind of get to take a break from social rules, Halloween is a release. Mm-hmm. And so not only is it a day when people can act differently than they normally act, especially, you know, you can have a house look like it's covered in blood on Halloween and the police are just going to be like, hey, that's kind of cool. But any other day of the year, that might be a problem.
Like, nice use of corn syrup over there, guys. Keep doing what you're doing. You know?
Right, right. But like, so not only is it a break from social customs, it's also a release in other ways, because Halloween is an opportunity for people to confront their fears and for people to confront their mortality in a way that is not necessarily less deep than it might be in other contexts, such as, you know, a wake or a funeral, but maybe in a way that is a little more balanced, because we're kind of taking a lighter perspective on things. And what's interesting, you know, is that Samhain is traditionally seen as a time of the veil between the world of the living and the world of spirit being at its thinnest. So especially you see, and it's celebrated in multiple cultures, not just the Celtic New Year, where Samhain was one of the times a year when there was, it was kind of seen as chaotic. And in fact, in some areas there were like three entire days was the celebration of Samhain. It was, I think the longest fire festival in some places, and not just that, but also, places, that celebrate, ancestors and, you know, the memories of the ancestors in like the Dia de los Muertos traditions, where you have this concept that you can commune with your ancestors or kind of temporarily be reunited with the spirits of your ancestors. And I think that's an important way for people to cope with the immenseness of human mortality. So I see, you know, kind of Halloween as a modern tradition, underneath all the imagery of the ghosts, goblins, monsters, there's still kind of that same mentality of this is a way that we can confront our own mortality in a way that's not absolutely terrifying. Although one thing that I think is kind of unfortunate that modern Halloween has lost is the sense of we can commune with our ancestors. And I actually had a really cool experience very recently as part of a Halloween and Samhain type festival where It was almost like a seance type setting, and someone that I had dated before who took his own life because he couldn't get off heroin, I actually felt like a sense of connection to him. Like I was able to communicate with him about a couple things, which was really powerful for me. And that's something that, you know, I see in certain Samhain traditions, but is something that I kind of see as lacking for modern Halloween. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think that that is probably an influence from a more of a Christian-based culture, whereas like the influence of ancestors doesn't have as important of a place in Christianity. If you look at a lot of other cultures across the world, like that is very important. But in modern Christianity, that is not as big of a deal. Like, you know, there is like it within Christianity, it's perceived that like, well, when people die, they go to heaven and that's it, you know?
Right.
And then, you know, eventually if you're not a dick, you go there too. So, throughout the rest of like Christianity, the communication with the ancestors is not only something that is not really practiced, it's honestly kind of frowned upon.
Right, because that's seen as the Lord's domain.
Exactly.
So it's not something that mortals should be meddling in.
And whereas, like, in nowadays, like, I think, you know, most, like, even most, like, modern Christians don't really see that as necessarily, like, wrong, per se. But it's right. Not a part of our culture. It's not something that we do. Whereas if you look in other places across the globe, that is more common. Mm-hmm. And in fact, you know, ancestor, you know, well, you know, like I wouldn't say it's quite worship, but there's a reverence, if you will, for ancestors, but you don't see that as much here. So I think that that's why it's missing. I think it's just that it's not a part of it or what we do.
Yeah. Which I think is really fascinating. And I think other stuff tends to, cause a lot of the different festivals and traditions that you see in, not just what we would consider neo-pagan culture, but just all different human folk cultures, all play into different, subconscious motivations that pretty much everyone has, or archetypal figures that you see cropping up in, all the different mythos of different cultures, figures that show up as characters in fables and, stories of the gods. So something that I wonder, like, where it crops up in our culture if it's not part of Day of the Dead type celebrations. And something that I've observed in little aspects of different cultures. Like, for example, if you look at the Catholicized Dia de los Muertos, that there's actually this sense of connectedness with the ancestors, but the church does it in a way that kind of, some people would say, appropriates the pagan traditions. Or in other places, people have things that are like ancestor altars. They just wouldn't call them that because, you know, of the sense of an altar being something in the Christian church that has certain specific purposes that do not include communicating with one's ancestors usually. Mm-hmm. So it's something that I see as it still pops up in different subcultures, different places, in different ways. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting how, you know, it still does that since it's not a part of, for example, in American modern Halloween celebrations.
Right. Well, I think a lot of people talk about cultural appropriation these days, but I think there is a very big difference between cultural appropriation and the natural blending of cultures that occurs organically over time.
Absolutely.
Like, let's take, for example, voodoo or the voodoo of, mm-hmm. like, deep down in, like, Louisiana. Like, having been to New Orleans before, it's this very interesting blend of Christianity and, well, pagan. You know, these kind right. of like these sort of pagan gods. Because what happened is like a lot of people there, they couldn't really like worship the gods of like mm-hmm. the voodoo cultures of, you know, Haitian culture, if you will.
Right.
But they could give lip service to them as long as they went to church and did churchly things and, you know, like stepped into Protestantism or Catholicism or, you know, whatnot, as long as they went to church every Sunday and did their little prayers and whatnot, they could still give lip service to the old gods.
Right.
And people kind of look the other way. And that was a way in which you kind of blended the two.
Mm-hmm.
In other cases, I think that in general, paganism, let's look at modern paganism. I think that it is somewhat of an amalgam, if you will.
Oh, absolutely.
As well. So if we're going to say that we're appropriating, well, I mean, we kind of borrowed a lot of things anyway.
Well, definitely. Like, the Wheel of the Year did not exist before communication between Gerald Gardner and one of the founders of the Orders of Bards, Ovates, and Druids. I'm blanking on his name right now, which I really should know, but they basically created the modern Wheel of the Year by taking a look at a number of different folk traditions and Celtic holidays and being like, okay, well, they didn't necessarily actually celebrate this time of year, but they celebrated this one, and it'd be kind of nice to have it even, and these other cultures celebrated this one, so let's just make 8 festivals.
It's not like it's not like the Druids are around for us to ask, okay, so how did that go?
And it was pretty much all oral tradition, so can't.
There wasn't really anything written down, and let's face it, if you pass things down orally, their human interpretation comes into play.
Oh, absolutely.
So basically, we're kind of filling in the blanks. We're like, well, we're not sure exactly how they did this, but this seems to make sense from what we do know about them.
Right.
So we could call it appropriation. We could just call it in like, well, we're trying to make it blend into our modern culture. Because, like, if you look at a lot of the old, like, pagan holidays, like Lammas, for example, that is like a harvest festival.
Yep.
Now, in a modern world, when you're living in a city, in an apartment and whatnot, sometimes those holidays can seem a little bit distant. We're not in an agrarian society like we used to be.
Mm-hmm.
If you do live out in the country and you do farm and things like that, maybe that would have some significance to you. But in a modern setting, that seems a little bit off, and it's tough to connect with that. So we have to kind of find ways of still honoring that tradition while putting it into our modern life. We have to be practical. In that note of like, well, you know, paganism is kind of an amalgam already. We already are appropriating things from different areas and just making it work the best we can. And I don't think that that's necessarily disrespectful.
I don't think so at all.
I don't think so either. I think it's just, you know, times change, opinions change, people change, and you make the most with what you got. And cultures blend as they work together.
Yeah, and it's definitely like most people in modern metropolitan areas are going to feel really no earthly pull for celebrating harvest festivals. But, you know, the symbolism of harvest and gratitude for it and the bounty of the earth that shows up at Lunasa or Lammas is something that is relevant. You know, it's a metaphor that a lot of people can apply. Just like in the U.S., the quasi-holiday of Thanksgiving, or retail holiday, I like to see it as, is celebrated, you know, at the end of November. But that's effectively just a displaced harvest festival.
Well, you know, Christmas, as we celebrate it now, you know, whether you celebrate it religiously or just as like a gift-giving holiday, or both, the reason we have it on December 25th is because of the Holy Roman Emperor, I believe it was Constantine. He was one of the first Holy Roman Emperors. He wanted to convert people to paganism. But people were, or not, from paganism
convert
to Christianity.
Away from, right.
To Christianity. But they're like, well, we don't really want to give up our holidays and our traditions. Mm-hmm. We like those. And your new religion doesn't have any of that. What are we going to do? And he's like, well, okay. So he thought about it. And he's like, well, you know what? I like the holiday Saturnalia. That's my favorite holiday. I really don't want to give that up either. So he said,
right?
So he's like, okay. So he asked, like, you know, Christian scholars to go, okay, when was Jesus' birthday? They're like, hell if we know. And so he's like, well, okay, I really like Saturnalia. That's the birth of the sun. And that's kind of similar to Jesus, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we just say it was that day and we still celebrate all the same things on that day, and that'll get people to convert.
Sure. I mean, it's a plausible story, right?
So that's why we celebrated on December 25th, is because that was a Roman holiday.
Mm-hmm.
And people were like, well, if I don't have to give up my traditions and I don't have to give up my holidays, maybe converting won't be so bad.
Right.
So this was a friendly way of converting people to Christianity while still holding on to the traditions. So if, you know, and I think that Halloween has got some similar things today.
Oh, absolutely.
We just kind of pulled a lot of things in. Like, trick-or-treating started in, like the early 20th century. Because kids around this time of year would, like, teenagers would go knocking door to door and start causing trouble, like, defacing yards and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it became kind of a public, like, you know, problem. So they said, what if we give them, like, one day where they go door to door and we'll give them stuff, and that'll be the, and they can cause trouble and cause mayhem, and as long as we give them stuff, they don't actually destroy anything. And that's where trick-or-treating started. And then people, like, thought about, well, there's all these old, like, pagan, like, holiday traditions where people would go door-to-door and get candies and sweets and stuff like that.
Which a lot of that actually occurs around Yule, but,
right.
You know, why not just bring some of it over to...
And so it just kind of two mm-hmm. cultures folding into one to address a public problem.
Right.
So, I mean... If we're going to say, like, you know, appropriation, well, pretty much our whole culture is. That's kind of part of being in a melting pot.
See, I think there's nothing wrong with appropriating and mixing cultures. I think it's probably good to try to pay respect to where things come from, but obviously, like, we can't just, you know, we can't not have blending. We can't just make arbitrary lines, and we wouldn't know where to draw them anyway half the time. And it's something like, I saw this this meme circulating on Twitter, and it's this witch in a white robe next to the Halloween green-skinned, big-nose, pointy hat witch on a broom.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the caption is something like, you know, this is not a joke. This is my culture. This is who I am. This is not okay. And so there have been some very, very strong reactions to that, because a lot of people are like, well, what the fuck? Like, this is absolutely ridiculous that someone's trying to invalidate Halloween, which I would tend to side with that. But at the same time, I don't like the level of criticism for paganism that tends to come up when people are...
Well, I mean, that just comes down to lack of public knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
As far as, like, you know, having been pagan for, like, a decade now, I don't find it offensive. I know that the image of the green witch is just, that comes from, like, the Wizard of Oz. That comes from Hollywood. Mm-hmm. That is a different interpretation. That is something else. That's Hollywood. And I understand. I'm like, I know the difference between fantasy and reality. If people are going to think that that's what witches are, let them think that, as long as they're not being violent or hatred, you know, or expressing hatred towards me. They just don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how can you expect people to get it? You know,
you
can always educate, but, you know, if you jump in and you immediately start, like, getting angry with people, they're not going to listen to you. They're going to
of course not.
They're immediately going to invalidate everything you say.
But it makes for great television, and it's also what social media is filled with.
Oh,
it's just people spouting off at each other like, you know, dicks.
Oh, it's excellent clickbait. You know, it's, title, like, you know, those are the titles that get people to go and look at your article, and you whack in money from the
definitely.
Ad revenue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I see what they're doing. It's smart, but it's annoying. You know?
Right.
But, like, I will say, like, as someone who's identified with, you know, paganism for, like, 10 years, I don't see that as particularly bad. You know, I just think it's just something different. It's like apples and oranges. It's a whole different idea. You know, there is the... Because what I am is a witch, and what a cartoon witch is, that's two different things. And that's, I don't even see them in the same ballpark. It's just that it's the witch is a common fiction archetype. That's it.
Oh, absolutely.
So, yeah.
It's just someone who is in touch with and a channel for otherworldly forces. And it's portrayed so many ways in different cultures, including in modern, you know, cartoons and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's Hollywood. Da, 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 da. I mean,
right?
You know, I know the difference.
Hollywood. I don't know the words to this stupid song. Yeah, something like that.
That's all I know. You know, it's just, I don't even think of it as the same thing. It's not really Hollywood's job necessarily to educate everybody. They're just there to put on a show.
Right.
You know, and they want to get money. They want to make, you know, they want to sell it. You know, it's up to us as individuals to understand fantasy from reality.
Yeah.
We need to be smart and be like, okay, like, Mark Ruffalo really does not turn into the Hulk, guys. You know, that is CG. You know, people don't actually turn into the Hulk. Okay. That's fantasy and reality. I mean, if you go around thinking that all these things in television are real, and you're going to be really disappointed when you find out it's not.
Absolutely.
But I said, that's fiction. You just, you blank out, you watch a story and you enjoy it and you come out of it saying, well, that was fun. Now I'm going to go and mow my lawn and go to work and do real people things.
So, I mean, honestly, like, I have a hard time just kind of zoning out for a story. Not that I have a hard time with the suspension of disbelief, but it's really hard to just sit there and not, like, want to be like, ooh, I could create something, like, using this idea from that, and then, I don't know. I'm more creator than consumer, but yeah.
Well, I'm like that, too. I get ideas, but I'm just saying it's, like, suspension of disbelief is what.
Right, right. Know, that like it's just, like, we know this is a story, this is done for entertainment's sake.
Uh-huh. Right, right, right. And that's fine. But I'm like you. I'll sit there and I'll be watching something and be like, aha!
Right?
I'm going to write about that later.
Or it's like, I've talked to a couple people on the show about the difference between porn sex and real sex, because the way it's portrayed in porn is all about the presentation and entertainment value. Mm-hmm. And like, there's been a movement in mainstream porn to go towards some slightly more realistic and guerrilla type or amateur type porn, but like other things like trans porn has not caught up so much. Mm-hmm. Like, it's still a little bit catching up with that. So it's kind of interesting just to compare the two. If you look at like mainstream porn, and especially where like fetish clip sites have gone, mm-hmm. versus where a lot of the trans porn still is, and seeing how much a certain story gets played out.
Right.
Each time. It's, I don't know, I find that fascinating.
Mm-hmm. And yet we can still, like, we can have these same tropes done over and over and over again, and we still mm-hmm. love them. Because, you know, it's all fantasy. But, you know, that is a good point. You know, people often don't know that, like, yeah, we may actually be having sex, like, on these films, but that doesn't mean that the things that we're doing are things that we recommend that people do all the time.
Right. You know?
And we know that, like, those positions, nobody's enjoying themselves.
Yeah, they look great on film, and like, that's about it.
We don't really actually like this. This is not hot. We are just acting, you know. But we know that it looks good, and that's mm-hmm. because it's fantasy. It's a story. And then people want to criticize porn for that, but I'm like, well, that's not porn's job to teach you about sex. It just happens to be sometimes because of our lack of sex education in this country, mm-hmm. it tends to be people's only resource.
Right. It's like, do we expect Hollywood special effects artists to teach people about the laws of physics? Yeah. No, that's not their job. That's not the purpose they serve in our culture. Mm-hmm. They serve as entertainment.
Like, what is it? Peter Jackson would have stopped, like, Lord of the Rings midway through. Okay, people, I just want to let everyone know here that elves aren't real. They don't actually live to be 300. This is just really good makeup. The pointed ears, it's prosthetics. Okay, I just wanted to stop that now. Okay, you can go back to watching. It's cool. Oh, throw the ring in. Oh, damn it. You missed it again. Yeah. I mean,
right.
Is that how we're going to
That's something that I think is really cool about interactive stuff like camming, mm-hmm. Is that you can, like, yeah. go back and forth between talking about what is actually fun and putting on a good show.
Absolutely. And that's a cool yeah. thing about it, because it's live, and, you know, when it's live, it's, well, it's real. And I think mm-hmm. that sometimes, like, yeah, you do have to keep up the fantasy in cams.
Right.
But sometimes the people that come into your room, they want to feel like a connection with you.
Oh, absolutely.
And they want to know that you're a real person, and that's why they go to you rather than just,
That's honestly usually the appeal for people who hang out in my rooms, because I'm kind of androgynous looking for a trans girl, so I don't really fit the she-male fantasy so much, with like a super feminine face and giant boobs and then rock hard cock. That really doesn't fit my body or face, but you know, I have an engineering degree. I know a lot about kink. I'm more than happy to talk to people. I try to be polite and respectful. And so people really like being able to come in and have an interesting conversation with someone who's flirtatious and half naked.
Right, right.
So, yeah.
They want a real person to talk mm-hmm. to.
Absolutely.
They want a real girl. And, you know, it's, you know, or and I think that that's what makes it, that's part of what makes it fun and appealing, is that you can be a little bit more of yourself.
Yeah.
And now, mind you, like, sometimes we can only be so much of ourselves, because they are coming here to, you know, have fun and, you know, rub
right.
around, you know, and let's, but, I mean, but you still can let a little bit of yourself kind of, like, come through, and it's not all mm-hmm. just, like, you know, not just a Barbie, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. So, I kind of want to go around to, like, we're talking about camming and making things, and mm-hmm. you know, and you and I are both like the type that we see something done, then we want to improve on it and make right, similar right. stuff ourselves. So I know last time you were on the show, mm-hmm. we talked a little bit about Orc Girl, your comic.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So we really didn't get to go into that too much. So remind me again of what your comic is about.
Oh, well, basically, it's both a comic and a novel. I started out writing as a novel, but I thought maybe I'd do a comic kind of like on the side.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of like I'm updating them together. But basically, it's a fantasy, a contemporary fantasy about a young woman who's like 29 who goes into this fantasy world where she is basically kidnapped at first by like these mercenaries mm-hmm. and then rescued, if you will, by a raiding band of orcs and that give her like a, you know, and the king of the orcs, Vargin, gives her a choice. He says, I can either like free you from like these mercenaries and you can kind of wander off in the woods on your own, he goes, or you come with me and I'll look after you, but on one condition, you become my human pet. So it's very kinky.
Yeah,
It is a romance, and in this case, you know, the orcs are often like, you know, the bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
I have a story where the orcs are the good guys, basically, and the humans are kind of the assholes.
I mean, that would make sense to me, but
you know, often, you know, the orcs are bad and they're
right,
you know
right.
raping and pillaging and all that, and you know that's not necessarily the case here. And you know, I wanted like, and there's several reasons I wanted to write this. I read a lot of, like, I love fantasy,
mm-hmm.
and I love fantasy romances, but they're all about, like, a woman who's, like, 18 years old or something, and I'm like, I can't relate to, like, teenage stories anymore.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. it's still fun, and I still enjoy it, but I'm like, I can't, like, these are problems that I don't have anymore.
Right. All that drama and, like, the whole, like, oh, sense of innocence, it's like, I'm over all that noise, like... Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I know what you
right.
mean.
I'm done
with
that. You know, I'm like, I've got like problems about work, about seeing all my friends get married, and
mm-hmm.
you know, and like I'm dealing with that. I'm dealing with existential crises, the fact that I'm like in my 30s and my life, and I'm not a rock star yet. What the hell, you know? I was lied to. And
working on that. We'll get there.
I mean, it says it on my business card, you know, rock star. But, you know.
Nice.
But that's my little inside joke. I'm like, if I say I'm a rock star. But you know, and I'm reading all this stuff and it's like, I don't relate to that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And, I wanted a story about somebody who's like in her late 20s, early 30s, going through the problems that I have and still gets to go to a fantasy world, because mm-hmm. I'm seeing women my age reading this stuff, like this teen, like romances about
right.
that's paranormal and fantasy based. But I'm like, surely they're having the same thoughts that I am. They're like, oh, well, I remember being 18 and this was a concern for me, but it's not anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I see people reading this and there's just not that much out there.
Yeah.
So I wanted to write something about somebody my age. Also, you know, my main character, Jenny, although her name gets changed to Gorza by the orc who kidnaps her.
Mm-hmm.
She, you know, is a submissive, and it's a very kinky story, but it's about a submissive being a badass.
Nice.
Which you don't see that very often either.
No, you do not at all.
It's all like the poor helpless victim, and that's why she is. But, you know, Jenny herself is a very flawed character. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as you see in the beginning of the story, that, you know, she made some choices in her life that she feels bad about. And she's a flawed character. She's not a victim. She, you know, she messed up. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I will, you know, I'll maybe give that later, but, and so I hate that. It's always like the submissive is this victim, she's put upon and everything, but also, you know, because he gives her the choice, he goes, well, you come with me, but these are the conditions. There's consent established.
Right.
She decides to do this. It's not just like her being kidnapped and she ends up liking it.
Right, right. The whole like non-consensual, helpless victim, submissive story. That's not only not a good example for consent, but just played out mm-hmm. way too much.
And now, mind you, like, her reasoning for going with him is that she's like, well, I'm in a world I don't know. And, you know, I could get hurt. I could get killed if I go off on my own. But this guy, mm-hmm. he's offering me shelter. And she thinks to herself, well, if I go with him, I do have a stand a chance of, like, living. And maybe I can escape. You know? So she does, like, think it through. And, mm-hmm. yeah, the situations are somewhat hyperbolic because it's fantasy.
Right.
You know, it's not real, you know. But I did want to have a story where it's like she makes the choice. She's like, mm-hmm. you know what? I'm going to make the best informed decision that I can with the knowledge I have, and this is what I'm going to do.
Right.
So that's where Orc Girl is.
That's actually a really good model for adult decision making. I remember there's a Calvin and Hobbes comic that it's I think Calvin's parents are talking about mm-hmm. like, you know, how they don't have all the information and they feel like as adults they should, or something mm-hmm. like talking among themselves because right. of something Calvin had said. Uh-huh. And like, that's something, you know, I'm 33 and I'm like, you know, I'm starting to get a hang of some aspects of being an adult, but yeah. So like this idea of like, well, you don't always have the information and you kind of have to make some guesses. You kind of have to weigh, you know, cost benefit analysis and like look at the risks and then make the best decision you can at the time and consider like what other options you might have down the road. That's actually a really good model to use because that's not something you see being done in stories very much.
Well, especially like, okay, when we're kids and we're reading stories, like the good guy makes the good decision. You know, bad guy makes the bad decision. And so we are taught that, like, being a good person means always doing the right thing.
Always knowing the right thing.
Where most of your decisions that you make as an adult are kind of just like, well, it's not a matter of good or bad sometimes. It's just a matter right. of what you got to do.
Yeah, it's like, well, I kind of need to take care of this thing, and I have this time frame to do it. I kind of also need to take care of this time frame to do it. I have this person that I'm involved with and like I've spent some time with them recently, but really probably should spend a little more time with. And it's like trying to balance like, okay, so what do I do now with everything on my plate? And it's not a matter of like, oh, the right thing to do is this. It's trying to make informed decisions in ways that bring about the least harm to parties mm-hmm. involved. And it's not a matter of like, oh, this is good, this is bad, this is right, this is wrong.
It's making the most of what you got, you know?
Right.
That's you know, that's adulthood, you know. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that, you know, a lot of people realize that. And, you know, I get friends all the time that like they'll get mad at character when a good guy makes a bad decision, like a fictional good guy, you mm-hmm. know, makes a bad decision, but then turns around later and makes up for it. Like they get mad about that they even had the character make a bad decision in the first place. So I'm like, what do you think? Like, what? You've never made a bad decision and eventually you had to turn around and be like, okay, well, I got to fix this.
But that's what makes stories interesting. Right. It's character development and it's depth of character. Mm-hmm. Because if characters are always consistent in everything they do, they're not very interesting mm-hmm. and they're not very relatable. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's actually, I think something that I like to see more of in stories.
You know, that's how I felt. I'm like, I feel like with women in stories, we're often portrayed as either victim or villain.
Mm-hmm.
Never a bit of the two, which most of us are.
Right.
Like, I mean, at many, like, and we may not be like, you know, the villain, like, twiddling my mustache and laughing evilly kind of villain, you know, but we might sometimes, like, do something or say something that pisses somebody off, and later on we're like, oh, fuck, I didn't mean it like that, or, mm-hmm. oh, fuck, I hurt somebody and I didn't want to, or, you know, And but we become the villain sometimes in people's eyes. Like, we're this horrible, horrible person that did this awful thing. I'm like, no, I just fucked up once. I'm sorry, you know?
Right.
And oftentimes in stories, we're either like, you know, the victim, like, oh, I'm put upon. Everything bad has happened to me ever in my life. And then somebody good comes along and our lives are perfect.
Yeah.
You know? Or we're the villain who causes all the problem. We're the Catwoman, the femme fatales of the world who cause problems.
And it's the women are either blameless or they're bitches.
Uh-huh.
Almost exclusively. And that's something that, and you're talking about sometimes, like, the good guy makes bad decisions, or even stories where the bad guy is sometimes the one making the better decisions or the more humanitarian decisions. That's like something I really like about the Thomas Harris books, you know, Silence of the Lambs and Hannibal, is that not only are the characters rich and interesting, but it's like the characters who are doing some of the worst things are also some of the most respectful characters. And it's like, you don't see that well-rounded of characters very much in books, especially with plots that interesting. So
That's cool. That's very
cool.
Yeah, because I like to see characters that have, like, they're multifaceted, that have problems and, you know, issues. And it's not just, you know, and I think it's good when you do see them that they have, like, you know, personal problems, but I think it's good when you see them where they created their own personal problems too, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
It's not just, they're not just victims, you know? Because I think all of us at any given time, we're all making decisions and they may not always be good.
So. Oh, of course.
So, you know, that's where that's at. And that's, you know, well, like, okay, in the case of Orc Girl, Jenny or Gorza, the thing that she kind of did in her past is, like, you know, she's kind of this geeky girl, you know, she's not, and she's, you know, was in a relationship with a guy for a couple of years, and he was a good guy, but it wasn't, you know, he wasn't the right guy.
Right.
You know, because you can have the good guy and you can have the, well, but he's not the right one. And, you know, she had a problem with him being very passive, and then when she addressed it, he just wasn't very good at decision making. But she ended up one night having kind of like a little, like, tryst with a guy she meets at a party, and he's, you know, dominant and manly, and she's into him, and, well, she sleeps with him, and she feels bad about this,
right?
Because it was a bad thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, mind you, at this point in the story, it's been a year since her and the former boyfriend broke up, but she's still kind of plagued with the fact that she made a bad decision.
Right.
Nice
use of tryst, by the way. Not a common word. I'm impressed.
Thank you. Hey, I like my vocab.
Yeah, definitely. But continue, please.
But, you know, well, that's, you know, it's kind of, you know, where that's at is, like, and so, like, a year later, she's kind of still kind of dealing with the fact that she made a bad decision. Because often, we always hear the story about the person who got broken up with. They were the one that that was dumped. We hear about those stories. We like those stories, you know, and because we've all been through it.
Right.
But we don't often hear it from the other side. The person who made the, who either broke things off or had the affair or whatnot. And, you know, because they're the villain, they're bad, bad, bad. Well, were they the villain or did they just a dumb person making a bad decision?
Yeah.
And I think that that's most of what people are. You know, society, you know, things are not, you know, good and evil isn't black and white.
Oh, absolutely not.
You know, good and bad is just on a spectrum. And, you know, so I think a lot of the, a good part of the story is her kind of like coming to terms with this. And you have like these orc characters who are typically seen as the villains. And frankly, by human society in this story, they are these horrible villains. And there's propaganda against them about how bad they are, but they're really not that bad at all. And so, you know, you see a character who is seen as kind of the villain coming with other people who are typically seen as the villains.
Yeah. That's an interesting premise to take. And I do like the fact that there's propaganda around the orcs, because there's so many instances, like, in our recent cultural history with propaganda around Jews or African Americans, or even the Irish for a brief period, as part of some immigration stuff near the turn of the 20th century. And then, like, recently, a lot of propaganda about queer people, or even more recently, trans people. So it's really interesting that you chose to have that as part of the orc's position in this world is, you know, there's propaganda that fuels that.
Thank you.
That's a really, really good,
thank you. Well, you
good
know.
Stance to take, because that symbolically opens up the issue of the nature of propaganda in human culture.
Well, because the reason in my story that orcs and humans don't get along is that the orcs had been nomadic for a long time. Like, this is like hundreds of years ago. And then they finally, they were having a hard time dealing with it. Their numbers were dwindling and they needed a place to settle.
Mm-hmm.
So they decided to settle in the only place that the humans would let them. And that was high in a mountaintop, you know, amongst like in the middle of like vast marshlands where that nobody else wanted it. But the mountains were full of a rich ore that is very valuable. It's used for weapon making and all kinds of different things. And so the orcs are like, well, we can use this and we can establish trade and become. So at this point, the orcs are not like nomadic anymore. They're an established kind of society. They do have like, you know, a monarchy, if you will, but it's more like a chieftainship. And they use the ore as a way of trading, and the humans get greedy and they want more. And this caused a lot of fights and tension throughout the history between them. So it comes to the point that in order to kind of fuel their cause to like get the orcs out of there, humans make more propaganda in a way to show how villainous they are to get rid of them.
That's interesting. I like that. Yeah, I'm really interested, and I'll have to try to make time to check it out.
Oh, hey, I'll show it to you. Thank you.
Yeah.
I would be honored if you look at it.
I'd be delighted to look at it. Maybe we'll have time at some point later today after we're done doing other stuff we're doing. But yeah, it's like I find myself incredibly busy, especially now that I've moved from working part-time in retail and doing like porn stuff part-time to actually having a full-time job doing computer stuff and then still trying to do porn stuff on the side. It's like I met Natalie Mars at FetishCon and I had never actually seen any of her films, and like since I met her and I started talking to her a little bit on Twitter, I was like, you know, I really should watch some of her stuff. And I was actually talking to her early this morning, and that came up, and I was like, you know, I still haven't watched any of your films.
Well, you know what? We're busy, though. You know, that's our lives, and it's not that we don't want to do stuff.
Right.
It's that, you know, we're like, well, you know, I've got this custom video to do. I got this thing I got to update. I got work, you know, other work. I got, like, you know, phone calls to do, and, you know, we get busy. It's that's adulthood. It's kind of like, it's the equivalent of saying, let's hang out later.
Right. Let's hang out later.
You know, but that's kind of how our lives are. It's nothing personal. We just get busy. You know?
Yeah.
You know, we all want to do stuff, but, you know.
Especially working in entertainment. Yeah.
We're always, you know, it's we got the hustle.
Chase that money.
We mentioned earlier, we were talking about like Halloween and with camming.
Oh yeah, we were chatting about that a little bit.
It was like speaking of the hustle, you know.
Yeah, because so for anybody who I think it's still going on for another like day. Anybody who posts stuff on Clips for Sale, they're doing. If you didn't log in and see the announcement that you're required to read when you log in.
Yeah. I will say that gets your attention, though.
It does.
I do read that. You know, I'm like, oh, I can't ignore it until I...
right. But, yeah, that they're doing a prize for Halloween Clip. You just have to tag it a certain way, so...
It's really neat. I wish I would have been able to do more, but with moving, I was really only... But I did do one clip, and so I was able to get one out there for Halloween. But I think it's a really cool way to get... people, because sometimes as someone who's done clips for a couple of years now, you kind of get burned out, you kind of run out of ideas. But when someone kind of presents you with something like a little competition or like a little bit of promotion like that, you're like, oh, now I got this thing to work on. And I've noticed, like, the, you know, because of that, like, there's been a lot of, you know, of Clips for Sales, a Halloween promotion. There's been a lot of models producing Halloween clips. It's been really big this year. I got one friend, Two Thorned Rose, who was doing this, like, 13 Nights of Horrorween. And she had, like, it was really cool.
I saw some of her posts on that.
Yeah, really cool stuff, you know. And I was like, that's so clever, and it's a way to keep your fans engaged. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think that's neat. And I, like I said, I always liked Halloween. I like doing themed clips anyway. Like, even though I do a lot of the diaper stuff, I have a Harry Potter theme one I do. I've done a couple of other, like, stop motion
animations
with diapers, like, where the diaper crawls across the floor.
Oh my God.
And attaches itself to me. And
wow.
So I love theme clips anyway. I love costumes. So, you know, Halloween just gives me an excuse, I guess. But
Right.
I did one, a video just recently. It was like a mad scientist, like, a diaper thing where, like, and I did it like in black and white, and I had like a grainy texture over it, so it looked like an old, like, horror film from the
30s. Right.
And I did it very melodramatic, and I found like some royalty free music, and I was supposed to be this scientist who wants to create a diaper that will in fact change itself.
Ooh.
And
but where's the fun in that?
I know, right? but the diaper when I create it and bring it to life with, like, you know, I had dramatic, like, lightning and shit, you know, going on, but it attacks me and diapers me.
Oh. Oh, how horrible.
Oh no.
Attacked by my own invention.
I'll be a laughingstock at the mad scientist convention. Oh, yeah.
And see, what's actually, I think, kind of cool, you know, observing, like, some of these little fun little clip competitions and stuff that I've seen, is it helps bring more sense of community to all the just random cam models working online, putting out clips. Because other than, you know, different things like Fetish Con or Avian or XBiz or stuff, like, unless people happen to show up to those events, when do they actually run into each other?
Right. You know, we have to make the time to go, and
right,
you know, it's not like a 9-to-5 where you work with whoever is scheduled that day.
Right. There's no water cooler chat about last night's Walking Dead, you know, when you're a cam model. So, like, I think anything that helps build some sense of community with the models is really cool. And I'm a big proponent of, like, models helping each other out.
Oh, I agree.
So
I feel like that is something that, you know, especially when you're new, it's so discouraging seeing people that, like, are doing all this, and you're like, oh, wow, I want to do that. Oh, my gosh, I have no idea what I'm doing. And I'm, you know, but if we're good to each other and we're helping each other out, it ultimately helps us out in the end, too. I mean, it's mutually beneficial.
Yeah.
Because we're all, you know, we're all in it together. And frankly, though, it's good when you're new to feel welcome. You know, you don't like it. Because sometimes, like, when we're getting, like, some people in this business, they come in and they make it overnight. And then some of us, it takes us a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
But it's nice to know that, like, there's other people going through what you're going through.
Yeah. And something that that I think is really cool is, like, how there are some people in the cam community or just in the fetish clip making community who will keep an eye out for newcomers and will tend to kind of encourage them and help them learn things. When I first tried to make the jump from camming to doing some clips, because I had a friend who knew Jennery from Jennery's Kinky Adventures, and she had wanted a trans model for some clips. So I ended up doing that, and then I'm, like, introduced to clips for sale and, like, trying to make my own clips and stuff. There were a couple people who ended up, Vanessa Davis, who's done some cam stuff, and Vanya Vixen, who does a lot of fetish clips. And, especially Vanya, like, just all the things that I was not familiar with, that it was really helpful to have people who had already been doing this to be like, hey, so these are some ideas for if you're going to do that. If you're going to do this, you might need to be careful about this and that. And, like, if you want to shoot this kind of thing on trade, I'd be happy to do that with you. Just that kind of stuff is, like, immensely helpful.
Absolutely.
As a newcomer.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Because there's so many things, like, you know, I didn't know existed fetish-wise. And, you know, so many techniques and things. And I'm like, I didn't know. I mean, and I think, like, you know, it's a big difference between, like, fetish and, you know, vanilla. Is, like, fetish, you know, you really, you got to know, like, a little bit about what you're doing before you do it.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that you don't with vanilla, but, like, with fetish people, things are very particular. people get often very specific about colors, about sounds, about things with fetish, certain words, you know, like, you know, with spanking porn, you know, if you're dealing with like American clients, they're okay with you saying a spanked butt, but in like with British clients that might like your spanking stuff, they really want you to use words like bum or bottom. And that's more of a turn on for them because that's, you know, cultural differences.
Right.
And with fetish, you know, having kind of like knowledge beforehand, I'm like, oh, that these are the things, that's really going to be the difference between whether something's selling or not. And I think, you know, with vanilla, you know, porn, it's the same way, but it's often in like camera angles, how often you look at the camera, things like that are important too.
Or the 60% flesh rule. Things like that, yeah.
Yes, yes. Those things are, you know, those things are important too. But having that knowledge beforehand.
Right.
Because, you know, it's sometimes like if you're going to a fetish shoot, not knowing anything about the fetish can be the difference between whether or not they're going to hire you again. So, a producer, that is, you know, so.
Yeah, like I was asked to do some, like Giantess Vore type clips, and I didn't do them very well the first time, but I did make an effort to kind of understand what it was I was supposed to be going for. And since then, like, I've done some more of them and I thought they've came out pretty well, but
that's a tough one. Giantess is a tough one.
Yeah, it's really awkward for me because it's not arousing for me at all, and like so it's hard for me to kind of think about how that might be sexy. And it took some practice to be able to be like, okay, so I'm going to do this thing and try to make it, you know, appealing or enticing in some way. Because you kind of have to get a feel for like why someone might find this fun or sexy or whatever.
And so it's good when, like, you know, if, you know, I tell people, like, if they're new at like doing fetish, I'm like, start with the things that you like. You know, what are the things that turn you on? Pick that one thing and do it really, really well, and then start doing other stuff.
Well, you know? Right now I'm limited by obscenity laws in the U.S. because I'm really into people pissing on each other and stuff like that.
You have to be careful about that.
Yeah.
That's so, okay. Yeah. That's different. You know, that's tough.
That's a really frustrating limitation because I think I could probably end up making some really hot content, but...
Depends on who you go with. Like, you know, like I know like on... Pornhub, you can like piss on somebody else and they're okay with it, but
not on Clips for Sale. So right. So yeah, I could, and that's something I keep meaning to do, is make some promotional content doing some of that on Pornhub, and then people could potentially order custom type things that are similar that way. But you know, I just can't like put that out on a clip store because it's more for pissing, not obscenity laws so much as Visa's restrictions on credit card usage that Clips for Sale has to abide by. We're like almost at the end of the hour, and I feel like we could go on for a whole other hour.
This has been really fun. I enjoyed all the topics. It's been cool, and I've really enjoyed it. So
yeah, well, I'm so glad that I got to have you back. This was really exciting.
Thank you.
And if anybody happens to catch this show when it's airing tonight, this is actually a disclaimer pre-recorded show because the studio is like not actually broadcasting live, but
well, you know, holidays and stuff.
Yeah, holiday stuff. So, but after this airs, I will be at Skin tonight in Ybor, probably around 10 p.m. Probably going to go pick up a friend of mine and we'll both be there dancing.
Sweet.
So, yeah. So anybody in the Tampa Bay area who wants to see my, unusual and spastic, but interesting dance moves, come out and see me.
Yes.
Privates are available. So I hope everyone has a wonderful time and we will catch you next week.
Bye.